Val Berlinski was born and raised in Nampa, Idaho, the daughter of devout evangelical Christians. From 2003 to 2005, she was a Wallace Stegner Fellow at Stanford University, where she was also a Jones Lecturer in Fiction Writing. She received an MFA from the University of Virginia, and her work has appeared in Virginia Quarterly Review and The Rumpus. The Girl Who Slept with God is her first novel. Val, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
The Girl Who Slept with God, it's an awesome first novel, a debut novel. And I have to say, as a writer, I recognize the signs when the publishers really believe in this book, and they believe in this book. You're getting great reviews. I mean, everyone from the New York Times, Washington Post, and they even created an audio version of it. Whose voice is that in the audio version?
You know, I cannot remember. We went through, there were several people that we had originally considered, and one female got sick, and another had some competing activities, and I cannot remember precisely, but she has a great voice. She does an amazing job.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And I'm wondering, as a writer with the first book, what that felt like the first time you listened to it. Were you able to listen to the whole thing, or did you just listen to parts of it?
I have listened to parts of it, and it's very strange. I mean, it's a very strange experience to hear your words sort of coming out of someone else's mouth in that way. It's fascinating and almost a little revealing. It makes me feel kind of vulnerable. I think that must be what it's like to watch yourself if you're an actor on the screen or something.
Yeah, that does sound like it'd be a really weird experience, especially I'm wondering if there's at times when perhaps the reader reads a line and you would think, that's not how I would read it.
Exactly. Yes, that's also true. I think, wow, that sounds slightly different, but it's wonderful. It's just a very revealing sort of experience. I hadn't anticipated that at all.
I can see why the publishers would put it on audio. It's a page turner. It really is. I mean, it does not lack, it's a literary characteristics, like very developed and three dimensional characters and just really an organic form. It does, you don't feel like the structure of the book came first. You feel like the structure of the book was born out of the language and out of the characters. So it's really beautifully literary, which, of course, is what we admire in the MFA culture or the literary culture. But it's also a page turner. I mean, I couldn't put it down from the first time. You didn't start writing fiction, and this is really inspiring, especially for people who are getting a late start writing fiction.
Yeah.
Didn't start when they're 18. You started when you were 42, just writing fiction.
Yes, I did. Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, I was actually teaching high school. I was a single mom and I was teaching high school English, and I was getting a little bored because I'd been teaching the same books over and over and over, and the kids were not. I was teaching a public high school, a huge one, so it was actually a little bit more like a jail than a school.
And like 35 students in a class, that type of thing?
So I thought it might be more fun maybe to teach creative writing. And I begged my principal and asked him if I could do this. And he said, well, what have you written? And I kind of hemmed and hawed. And it's embarrassing to say, but I went home and tried to write a short story and realized that it came fairly easily to me. And so from that point on, I started taking classes and got an MFA. And, it's not like I advise this route at all. If I had to do over, obviously I wish I had started when I was in my 20s, but I then had quite a bit to write about because I'd been alive for quite a while, obviously, before I started to write. And some young writers have the talent and the skill, but they actually don't have a lot of experiences to write about.
Absolutely.
So that was one advantage of starting late. Is that, I'd had quite a bit of living that I'd done, so, yeah.
And what became of that first story? How did that first story link to your ultimate, I would say, success as a writer?
That first story was a not very good imitation of Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Sweet!
And he was a writer I adored. And I sent it off in complete ignorance and innocence to a writing competition, and surprisingly, I won.
What? You won?
I did. I won this contest.
Oh, my God. And you know what? Writers all over the world are going to hate you for saying that.
I know. It's a terrible story because it just shows how much of writing can actually be luck and the random nature of things. And the guy that was the judge happened to be in charge of the MFA program at the University of Virginia. And
oh, my
wrote
God.
Me a wonderful note and said, have you thought about getting an MFA? And would you like to come here? And, of course, I was wildly thrilled at this opportunity and took him up on it and ended up at UVA.
Wow. Whether you're considering God or the universe, it almost seems as if you were moving towards this inevitably. It needed to happen this way.
It sounds like that, doesn't it? But and I don't know what to say about that except that it was marvelous and it changed my life utterly from that point on. It really did.
And so. I think you're right about, you know, there needing to be an element of luck. But the fact is, if the product isn't good, no matter how lucky you are, it's, you know, you're not going to win first place. It's not even going to get...
True. Although, you know, I have had a certain amount of, I would say, you know, for writers who are feeling discouraged, it's... Certain things that happen in the publishing world are somewhat random and lucky.
Oh, absolutely.
So don't get discouraged if right off the bat things don't occur for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what I tell my students all the time, some of whom graduated 10 years ago and are still trying to get their first book.
Yes, exactly. That's so true.
But, you know, because you had such experience, you're teaching at this large high school, you're a single mother, and I imagine... A lot of struggle comes from that, emotional struggle, financial struggle.
Yes.
I mean, all kinds of things that you had to put up with, that the impulse to write fiction has been with you for a long time, even if you maybe didn't recognize it at first.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's been there.
And from the time I was tiny, really, as a little kid even, I wrote little plays and forced everyone to act in them. And, you know, I've always been that kind of kid, very dreamy and introspective and imaginative. I was criticized in school very frequently for, you know, doing things that I really wasn't supposed to be doing that involved a lot of imagination.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The impulse was always there, but because of the community I was brought up in, that just didn't seem like an option to me at all.
Right. You're talking about a very strict evangelical Christian community.
Yes.
Which is really kind of, you know, one of the elements of this novel. Three young women growing up. Well, two young women and a little girl, really, frankly, because I think Frances always stays. She's still in elementary school when the novel closes. But these young women who are growing up, going through adolescence, going through, you know, changes in their lives and in the way they see, you know, their place in the world, growing up in a very, very strict Christian home. I did some dabbling in your biography, and I know you had such a similar background and that this kind of fed the novel. But let me ask you in this way. You imagined stories probably all your life. You were creative. Like I imagine you like Jory and the other girls sitting in a lawn chair on the front yard reading book after book.
Right.
Which is, by the way, a beautiful image. But of all the stories that your first novel could have collapsed into, could have found so many different subjects, why this one?
Well, it's like many first novels, it's embarrassingly autobiographical.
Right.
But also, there's a sort of central mystery in the story that actually took place in my life as well that never was solved for me. My older sister did go on a mission to South America, actually, and was sent back early. And my parents would never explain to me or anyone what had occurred, what had happened. And my older sister and I were never very close because she, from the time she was a teenager, she began going on these missions and became a full-time missionary and left home and lived in Bolivia for most of my growing up years. Uh-huh. So she remained sort of a mystery to me. I never fully understood her at all. And she was a very closed person and wouldn't explain her motivations or how she really felt about a lot of stuff. And so this book really was my attempt at sort of uncovering her or explaining to myself, you know, what my family was all about and why we never talked about these things and what might have really occurred. Yeah, it was just sort of my strange little attempt at unraveling the very strange mystery of my family. They were an odd bunch.
And in the novel, we have, again, a very strict evangelical family.
Mm-hmm.
And a daughter who, her name's Grace, she's the oldest daughter, who really out-religiouses her to her family. She becomes a Shiite evangelical.
Yes, in fact, I found that. Even when I was a young teenager, I found her behavior sort of fascinating because it seemed almost like this strange reverse form of rebellion,
yeah,
in which she took my parents' beliefs to the nth degree, so much so that she frightened even them, you know, with her sort of saintliness. It was a very unusual situation in which my parents were a little bit afraid of my older sister.
Wow. Grace is a fantastic character. She goes off to Mexico because she's going to preach in Guanajuato.
Yep.
And she comes back pregnant.
Yes.
And that was a wonderful, wonderful twist. And in fact, you know, it feeds into the title of the novel, obviously, you know, The Girl Who Slept With God, because, you know, she's claiming some sort of immaculate conception, but also it works on so many other levels,
mm-hmm,
so many other ways to read. It's a fantastic title. But it's a really wonderful, wonderful, dramatic push into the rest of the novel. Jory, who is really, it's her novel. I mean, it's mostly her story, and really, ultimately, almost the relationship between her and her father. But Jory is the main character, and Jory is so unlike Grace. She has an element of her that is ready to just kind of have fun and experience being a young woman.
Yeah.
But how did she come about? Is she the Val Berlinski character in this novel?
Yes. Yes, she is. I'll just admit it, really. The two of us are pretty close in scope and size and everything else. Although she's probably a slightly more, I don't know, flattering portrayal of, I was a little more fearful than she was, but she's my fantasy character. She's me in fantasy form. Yes, and her relationship with her father ultimately becomes a very, very important thing for her, which was also true in real life. My dad was essentially he was God to me in every way. And in fact, oddly enough, it was almost as if I never really needed any other sort of God because he filled that role for me so fully. You know, I couldn't imagine anyone. This sounds so silly, but as a teenager, I really couldn't imagine anything or anyone any brighter or all-knowing than he seemed to me to be. You know, he was this nuclear physicist who was incredibly smart, although obviously emotionally he didn't always handle things as well as he might have.
The father is one of he's a fantastic character. The family is incredibly conservative. There's a list of things that the girls can't do.
Yes.
You know, they pretty much live in a subculture within a culture. But as much as I'm sure it would be easy to fall into cliches of evangelical Christians, it never does that. And one of the main reasons, I think, and one of the wonderful details about this family is the father is a scientist. He got a graduate degree in physics, and the more he thinks about the cosmos and the more he thinks about the infinity of space, the more it strengthens his faith. And there's that wonderful sermon by her father when he's talking about the mysteries of the universe vis-a-vis faith and Christianity. It was so beautifully written. I mean, is that something that you grew up with?
Yes, I had a very easy time writing that because I had heard him give that particular speech in one form or another, you know, from the time I was probably 12 till I was 20. So, you know, I was extremely familiar with my father's own take on the supposed connections between, you know, intelligent design, God, and the natural world. That portion of the book was very easy to write because I knew exactly what to say. I'd heard him give his little, you know, sort of life philosophy and how these two things could coexist instead of being antithetical to each other. Yeah, my dad's, the character of my father in this book was very easy to construct. I always knew exactly what he would say at every moment because I'd lived with him for so long. So, yeah, my older sister was a little harder to create on the page simply because she, you know, truly was always sort of opaque to me.
Right.
I could never quite figure her out, yeah. But my dad, definitely. It, even growing up, though, the older I got, the more strange it seemed to me that he could hold these two sort of views and have them align. It just, that was always very intriguing and somewhat bothersome to me as well. You know, theoretical physics and Christianity, really conservative Christianity. Mm-hmm. And yet he believed fervently in each of those things. So.
You know, I think I find in most children that they ultimately often return to the beliefs that they grew up in, the system within which they grew up, or at least they have some manifestations of those beliefs and those values. And having grown up in both, you know, very conservative evangelical Christianity and physics, the cosmos, knowing about the planets, knowing about the way the universe functions, or questioning the way the universe functions and questioning existence itself. Which one of you, as an adult, have you finding yourself returned to as a kind of a support, a belief system, if any of them?
Well, the older I got, the more deeply aligned I became with the sort of scientific view of things. And I think that my experiences in graduate school and at larger universities also probably fostered that
right.
sort of thinking somewhat. And the problem with, I'm thrilled that you feel that the characterization of these evangelical Christians is fair-handed. That
oh,
was
absolutely.
My chief
absolutely.
Goal was to not have them seem laughable or stereotypical or as if I were just making fun of them, because that was
right.
not my intention. My parents were very sincere about their beliefs, but I found them ultimately so restrictive that I just couldn't believe in that sort of system, religious system, that ostracized right. so many other human beings and ways of thinking. So the older I've gotten, the further removed I've become from that sort of environment.
Right.
I still, believe me, I utterly respect people who have sincere faith in various forms of religion. I have nothing personal against that at all. It just, for me as a human being growing up, it was very claustrophobic and kept my life very narrow. My experiences since then have been very life-affirming mm-hmm. and have allowed me to write and to teach and to be a part of the world, the larger world, in a way that I was never allowed
right.
to back then.
Well, I'm talking to Val Berlinski. Her first novel is The Girl Who Slept with God. Not to focus the conversation on me, Val, but when my first novel came out, it was called And the Shadows Took Him. I found, like all first novelists, you mentioned this earlier, and I think this is true, like all most first novelists, it was highly autobiographical. And the members of the family in the novel just happened to be exactly like the members in my family. But the father, as the narrative started to develop, didn't really become a very nice person. He was really kind of a jerk, but, you know, I allowed it to happen. And when I published the novel and had my first reading in my hometown where my father still lived, you know, at the after party, he looks at me and says, "Am I William?" You know, which is yeah. And I get, "No, Dad, of course you're not William."
It's fiction.
Yes. I guess this is a long-winded way of asking you how your family is receiving this, how your community
well,
is receiving this.
You know, when I was first writing the book, the first draft of the book essentially had quite a different last half. And that was because my parents were both still alive. And I was very worried mm-hmm. about how they were going to respond to this book. I seriously couldn't even imagine how they were going to be all right with the material and their portrayals. And I do think that had quite a bit to do with my hesitation and the amount of time it took me to finish. And then after I had written an entire first draft, both my parents died within just a few months of each other.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it was a terrible time, and I definitely went through a grieving period. And when I was feeling a little better, I went back to the book, and I realized that I had not exactly been true to the material because I was so worried about pleasing my parents. So I rewrote the last half and allowed it to be a little bit more, well, quite a bit more dark and true to life. And then I sent it out to my agent, and, you know, it found a publisher very easily and stuff, but I don't think it would have in its first iteration. And a lot of that had to do with my worries about my family's reception of it. So by the time it actually came out, my parents had both passed away. But my older sister had never read the book and knew nothing about it. And the first time she even read the book was after it was published. And she came to stay with me, and we went to my very first reading together. She came back to my house and sat down and read the novel from beginning to end. And I was worried, you know, about what she was going to think.
Because this is the Grace character.
Yes. She was wonderful.
I'm afraid of Grace. I could understand why you would be.
She's still very much an avid evangelical.
Wow.
And yet she's such a truly loving person that she found the book quite wonderful, and it's actually brought us quite a bit closer together because it revealed to her my fascination with her and also my mystification about, you know, how she came to be the way she is and why she did some of the things she did. So,
and ultimately, the book is about love, and if you're able to recognize it, you're going to see the love, especially that Jory has for her father and then her mother too. But that connection she has with her father, her God, it's a beautiful book. It's called The Girl Who Slept with God, and I have so many other questions I could ask you, but unfortunately, we're running out of time. But Val, I wish you the best of luck on this
book.
Thank
you so much.
I hope they do the movie version.
You've done it. This was wonderful. Seriously, you ask amazing questions. So this was really, really fun.
Well, thank you, Val, for joining us.
I've enjoyed it utterly.